revving up the lean brace. Fasten your seatbelts and hold on to your carrots. Comrades, we are going to burn some high-performance health rubber. You're about to enter the Lean Braze Throwdown Zone, accelerating for the simple solutions. We are Avengers of Health. Hide the donuts. You're listening to the Lean Braze Radio Show at theleanbraze.com. Welcome, Braze. I'm Ron Jones, and I have Karen and Roger Bivens with me and Marlee Bisbee. We're in Tucson, Arizona on location for the Lean Braze. And they are, Roger and Karen are Ironman triathletes. And you're over 30.
Double.
So Karen is 67 and Roger's 69. And Karen has finished 9 full-length Ironmans. And Roger has done 6. So, again, I'm here in Tucson, Arizona this weekend because I'm hanging out and interviewing and hiking with a lot of people over 60 that are really physically active, and we're hoping to get some information that could be inspiring for people listening. So welcome to the Lean Braze, where we try to get people moving.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
And it was nice chatting with you a little bit before we started recording, and we'll start with Karen. You've got a background in adaptive physical education and
went back to school as an older adult.
Uh-huh.
Got into running, got into finishing my education.
Uh-huh.
Got a degree in adapted PE and a master's in kinesiology.
That's what I have, kinesiology. Great.
So taught over 10 years at community college in California and loved every bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
Taught adapted PE primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And taught for the health improvement program at Stanford part-time.
Awesome.
So I did something that I really enjoyed doing and felt that perhaps I could help some people that had some special needs.
Right.
And really enjoyed that.
Good. And you guys, lived internationally when you were working, and were you physically active through those years as well at some level?
Yeah, I'd say we moved around quite a bit internationally because I was in international banking.
Okay.
And this was after I actually graduated from the military academy at West Point, and so, of course, had a pretty physically active regimen there,
right,
which kind of carried over. And found that even though we were traveling internationally, we could always pretty much do some sports, but certainly we could do some running. So I've had the thrill of running in Tokyo and running the first Brussels Marathon in Belgium and
oh really,
and that kind of activity, as well as just good training runs daily.
We did a show earlier today with Chuck Giles, the ultra cyclist here in Tucson, and one of the questions I had for him, because he's been active his whole life, and in corporate wellness, I work with a lot of people that are in and they're out, and they're in and they're out, and they're out more than they're in, and the people I'm talking to today, you've been in. So what inspires you? What are your tricks to stay active? What drives you to keep that lifestyle decade after decade? What can you share?
Well, first of all, for me, it wasn't like I was in from the get-go, because women of my era
mm-hmm.
didn't do those things. They weren't encouraged
right.
so much to do those things, although I always walked a lot. I was always an outdoor type person. We lived overseas. I was active with our children and
mm-hmm.
supported their activities, but it wasn't until we moved back to California that I really got into running. And found that out, and I loved it. I loved the way I felt.
Mm-hmm.
I met other people of all different ages, including people my age and older, who inspired me and encouraged me and mm-hmm. encouraged me to do my first marathon. And I liked the people that I met that shared the same lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the way I felt. And then I was fortunate enough to qualify for Boston on my first marathon, and so I started including a little bit of travel
mm-hmm.
with it, and I thought, wow, this is really pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like this new way of life, and I've continued with it. I get a lot of joy out of seeing friends I've met along the way and challenging my body. And I like the training. I like to swim. I like to bike. I like to run. And I have met people who say, well, I'd like to do an Ironman someday, but I don't like the training. It's a long event.
Yeah.
You kind of have to like it.
So how many hours for people that don't know anything about triathlon?
Well, in the peak, you're talking 30, 40 hours a week for me personally.
Right.
That's about what it takes to
do
an Ironman. And then in off season, you're doing less, or maybe you're not even doing some of those activities. You take a little bit of a break. But basically in peak season, 30, 40 hours a week. So we're fortunate in that now we're pretty much retired, so we have time.
Right.
And believe me, I need it. I need the recovery time.
Yeah.
When you're older, I think you just have to train smarter and
I
listen to your
that.
Body a lot.
Yeah.
Take rest time if you need it. And I can do the volume of training, but I have to spread it out over a longer period.
Yeah. I can still be pretty intense, too, but I have to pick and choose when that happens. I went back to school later in life, so when I was 35 and 36, I was in community college running cross-country and track against guys 18 to 20.
That is so cool.
It was cool. And it, you know, I came to practice one day, and the coach had, we were going to run 34 quarters. And I just looked at that, and I almost had a nervous breakdown, you know. And what he recognized working with me, and then we both kind of learned together, is that I could have the quality, but I couldn't do quite the volume that the young kids were doing, and I need a little more recovery. But I was running in the top third of all my races. I made all conference. I did 18 quarters that day instead of 34. But I was 35 years old, so that's a lot of quarters at under 75 seconds a lap.
Well, when I got my adapted PE degree, I went to San Francisco State. And it's a state requirements for the adapted PE degree. They don't think that someone in their 40s is going to be getting that degree. So I had to learn how to teach all the different physical education activities.
Oh, yeah, all the different.
So we had to learn how to teach track and field. And our coach had us doing hurdles. And I mean, I whacked that hurdle on my shin. They don't lower them because I'm in my 40s. I mean, it's a standard thing. You get over the hurdles. And my shin just couldn't take it anymore. So I strung toilet paper in our backyard between trees so that I could practice without tearing up my shin in the process until I got the technique down.
Yeah.
Well, it was a safer way, protected my shin, so.
No wonder we were always out of toilet paper.
but in a way, it was kind of a thrill to be out there and a sense of accomplishment that actually this old body could actually do some of these things. And you just had to adjust and modify and work on your training to see, now, how can I reach that goal?
Yeah. At the time, I was tracking in the wellness, too, and had interest in health like you did. So I was using it for a way to inspire the young guys, too.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that guy's like, he could be our dad, and he's training and racing with us, you know.
It helped me in my teaching, too, because not all the physical education teachers practiced what they preached.
Right. Still that way, yeah.
And it enhanced my credibility.
Absolutely.
Because I taught regular PE classes as well. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, you're going to have a substitute next week. I'm not going to be here. And they said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to London. Mm-hmm. They said, are you going to see the Queen? And I said, no, I'm running the London Marathon. Whoa. That got their attention and also gave me respect from them. And, you know, I found if you walk the talk,
It
enhances your credibility.
That's a Jack LaLanne thing there. Yeah. We like that. Yeah, because a lot of people, in, you know, even corporate wellness today, a lot of people are getting into that because of the money. But they don't eat well and they don't exercise, and they're trying to tell people how to be healthy. It doesn't quite add up, you know.
Yeah, I might kind of addressing your question back a while ago is on how do you kind of stay with it or get into it and stay with it? And, you know, like many things, you have to make it a priority.
Mm-hmm.
And because as soon as you start saying, well, I've work to do or I've got something else to do and I'll do it another day or something, so it's got to be a priority and a commitment. But I think once you start doing it and you see the benefits of exercise and nutrition,
right,
on how you feel, on lack of illness and aches and pains and so forth, you really then say, hey, I've got something here. And it doesn't have to be because I'm training to do an Ironman. It can be I hike regularly, mm-hmm. I do something else, ride a bike, whatever, something else regularly, but something that you like to do,
mm-hmm.
So that you're not trying to emulate someone else,
mm-hmm.
what they like to do, and you're really not into it. So
one thing I got talking to Chuck is that, you know, you never know what you might be able to do if you give yourself a chance. So mm-hmm. while you're thinking when you're listening to this, well, I can't do an Ironman, you never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, how old were you when you did your first marathon, Karen?
I was 50 when I did my first marathon.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, that's when I qualified for Boston. So I thought, wow, this is pretty cool.
That's a great way to start.
Yeah. And for me, it helps having goals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that helps me. I mean, whether your goal is trying to lose some weight, training for a race, for me, it's setting out some competition there, but
mm-hmm.
having a goal, that works for me. So I think you have to have something to aim for,
right.
Or at least I do, rather than just, well, I want to stay healthy. Now,
mm-hmm.
even if you'd like to hike, like tomorrow, I understand you're hiking with a 75-year-old up to...
Right, Finger Rock. Supposedly, I hope she doesn't totally kick my ass and leave me in the dust.
She might. She might.
She's been kicking my butt since January.
There is that risk, Ron.
Yeah.
But see, it's like, okay, I'm going to make the goal of doing this particular hike. So
right.
you can take it into small little
mm-hmm.
goals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think it helps to have something to aim for.
I think that's a key in setting the goals properly. That like, for example, in triathlon, you don't say, jump into it and say, I'm going to do an Ironman. You start out with a sprint distance triathlon.
Something local,
Yeah, or just one of the events, a swimming event or a little run, 5K run or something, and then kind of see how you like it, if you enjoy it, if you want to build up to some big, stronger goal. I can remember years ago, we lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, and before we got into triathlons, and I was watching on the television there the Escape from Alcatraz
mm-hmm.
triathlon, which
mm-hmm.
is a pretty famous one, and I thought, that's incredible. How can anybody possibly swim from Alcatraz to San Francisco, let alone do all that other stuff? And lo and behold, we've now done about half a dozen of those escapes.
Really? There
so
you go. There you
get there somehow.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And for me, there is a sense of accomplishment doing something that not everybody
mm-hmm.
would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember the movie A League of Their Own
mm-hmm.
with Tom Hanks. And at one point, the catcher wants to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, why are you quitting? And she says, it just got too hard. And he says, it's supposed to be hard. If
right.
it weren't hard, everybody would do it.
Exactly.
So there is some kind of thrill and sense of accomplishment in doing something that not everybody would do, or something perhaps that is intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you look at behavioral psychology, people like challenging goals. If they're too soft, they're not very motivated to
right.
do them. So
right.
people like to do things hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope people start thinking of those options. We've gotten kind of soft, or the governor back on the East Coast, he said we've developed into a nation of wimps, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's amazing what people
yeah.
can do. Now, you've also, Karen, have done, beyond just your own racing thing, you said you've done some things for charity or to raise awareness for...
Well, after I really got into running,
mm-hmm.
then... I realized I was having some muscle strains and whatever, that it might be a good idea to do cross training. And I had friends in the California Bay Area who were with Team in Training, a Leukemia Society group. And they encouraged me to, you know, give triathlons a try.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very appealing to do something outside myself with a goal of a good cause. And I did my first triathlon with Team in Training, Olympic distance in Pacific Grove. And it was fantastic experience. I mean, I love the triathlon, but I also met some of the greatest people I ever could meet.
Right.
And we were outside ourselves, and we had honorees who had leukemia who inspired all of us on our team. And one of them in particular went on to do Ironman Canada, and he had leukemia. He ended up dying about a few months later. But he was our inspiration.
Yeah.
So you're just doing something for a good cause outside yourself, and there are lots of great causes and charity activities out there. But for me, I thought that was really inspirational, especially with someone who taught adapted PE and worked with people with disabilities. I rather enjoyed and would encourage people to think about doing something for a good cause and supporting others.
Yeah, one thing, you've heard of the Challenged Athletes Foundation,
and
what they're doing with disabled amputees and so forth. In fact, this last year at Kona, for the first time ever, they had a Hawaiian Ironman finisher who was a triple amputee. So it's just an incredible story, this fellow. But connected with the Challenge Athlete Foundation is an organization called Operation Rebound, which is a military organization to help those military personnel that have been injured, either amputees or whatever, get into sports, and, for example, triathlon being one of them.
Great.
And one of the things I've been working on with regard to my membership in Rotary here in Tucson is a connection between Rotary and the Veterans Hospital here in seeing if there are such wounded veterans coming through that we might work with, introduce to this, the Operation Rebound organization, but also help locally in terms of if they want to get into the sport, training, even equipment support, and so forth.
That's wonderful.
So because of my military background, I kind of have a little bit of an affinity for that. So
I've done some volunteer work for the Wounded Warrior Program. The particular program is LifeQuest in Colorado Springs.
Right, which is the bike riding.
Yeah, they their whole thing is, part of it, a good part of it is they, especially because most of the people they work with are soldiers or infantry people, right? So they're used to working in a team environment. And they get injured, and they come over here, and then they're in therapy and this and that, and they're isolated. And they've developed all kinds of, you know, separation anxiety kind of thing. So they bring them into their facility, and once a month they have a big outdoor event, some kind of eco challenge thing. They could be rafting or rock climbing, rappelling. And it was really cool to be on deck with them, see the exercise, corrective exercise therapy type stuff, and then be there on the weekend. They were doing a big rappel event. And then they did the orienteering. And so you saw them take all of their skills and come back together in a unit. And it was so important for their healing.
Yeah.
And they were healing faster.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's, and they're, you know, I didn't realize until I was on deck with them how many traumatic brain injuries our soldiers are getting. We were hearing about the amputees and things like that. But there's a lot of brain injury issues going on. So the more we can do for them, the better, for sure. We've got some background noise from the Sharpays running through the the portable studio here in Tucson.
I was going to also add that I'm very fortunate to be now a sponsored athlete by Trisports.com, which is a Tucson-based large online triathlon gear store.
Cool.
But that particular organization, company, does a lot for the sport. And they have a race every year up in Sholo, Arizona. 100% of it goes to charity, with 75% going to challenged athletes and 25% going to the town of Sholo. Mm-hmm. And that town built the high school track.
That's
on money
great.
From that race.
That's
and so,
great.
You know, we go up there, you're welcomed as an athlete, but it's again, another involvement with helping communities and athletes and
that's
other
the,
people.
That's an Avenger of Health thing. You know, our tagline is the Avengers of Health. And so that part of the Lean Braes and the people that we're working with is very vocal and very assertive to get the word out and to build a track for a high school. That's just awesome, you know, and to get, I've done a lot of work with child obesity and we were talking about that on the last show and which is another point that I thought of with you guys, and I've talked to Marlee about this, is a lot of the life experiences that I've had that I think have built my character and made me a better person came through my physical activity, whether it was a competition, you know, like Race Across America, or today we were hiking and met a gentleman that was a water scientist, you know, and just had an interesting chat with him for about 30 minutes coming down the trail. And mm-hmm. and a lot of the kids that are so overweight, they won't have the opportunity to get that enrichment. Mm-hmm. And so we really want to encourage people to get active.
Yeah.
It's so good for us. And for me at a deeper level, I'll mention this because Roger's here and I think he'd appreciate it. And it has been in the news a little bit lately. It's a national security issue. We really have to get people fit enough to dig out. Mm-hmm. And about 75% of the young people today for the Army aren't even recruitable because of the issues they have with obesity. Mm-hmm. It's pretty frightening.
It is.
If something really happened and we had to get geared up fast, it's kind of frightening.
One of the programs that's been started here for a few years now for kids, kind of in the 11-year or 10 to 12-year age range, and was started partially by Scott Blanchard, who I think you know, and mm-hmm. he does some bicycle coaching for me. He's mm-hmm. quite a good bicycle coach here. And that is prior to the El Tour de Tucson, which
right.
is
big
the
race.
Big
yeah.
bike race around Tucson that occurs in November each year. He takes, several months before, he and his partner take a group of kids mm-hmm. this age that are generally overweight, mm-hmm. Somewhat the couch potato, you know,
yeah.
the end of the game, the Xbox games and so forth, and start to get them riding bikes. And they furnish the equipment and everything, and then the training on a weekly basis to get them going and improving, and the whole goal being that they will do a certain distance segment in the El Tour de Tucson.
That's great.
And if they complete that mm-hmm. and do it, they then get to keep the equipment, the bike,
nice.
And so forth, which
great
has
deal.
Been contributed. So, and these kids,
that's great.
I've heard from the parents, they just,
wow.
the kids are just, you know, they love it, and it gets them out and doing something and
see, that's wonderful.
Builds that confidence in
right.
them that, and so forth. So,
and from a business perspective, you know, being in the corporate end of wellness, I mean, man, if you've got a healthy employee, they're not only are they there more, but they're more present and more productive, mm-hmm. and they're much cheaper to manage from a healthcare perspective.
Yeah.
So, and let's face it, we can't afford to throw any more money away, you know, with things going on.
Yeah.
So, now Roger, you've done a lot of Ironmans as well. Now, you did you guys get into the Ironmans right at the same time, or?
Karen, she tends to jump right in right away and tackle something, and she did that when with the her first Ironman, the Ironman Canadian Ironman mm-hmm. up in Canada, and but shortly thereafter I joined her, and we actually the first one we did together was in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And since, in doing that one and all the others, we've basically gone for what I call the exotic venue.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we've done New Zealand, Austria, Switzerland. We're going to do Brazil this May. And you know, kind of international, I mm-hmm. guess, mm-hmm. in many respects, but where then we can make a trip out of it, enjoy kind of a vacation, explore where we are, that kind of thing, and yet have a nice competitive race to do and so forth.
And you do the same event the same day.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you mentioned you got some award. You were someplace and you were the
oldest couple
there doing a full length.
In 2006, we both qualified for the Hawaiian Ironman, the Ironman World Championships in Kona. We qualified at Ironman Austria.
Uh-huh.
And we were the oldest married couple there. Not
great.
That anybody really cared, but we cared. And one of my friends, actually, Roger was just ahead of me on the run, which I didn't know. He passed me on the run.
Oh.
And I didn't know that. And someone said, oh, you've really finished pretty close together. If you had seen him, you could have crossed together.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, no, I would have tripped him. There's there is a little competitive side of it there. We're not crossing this together.
Not a race day, huh?
But it's a race. But we have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And I think the international events, too, brings together, common activity. But mm-hmm. you're in another country. You mm-hmm. get to meet athletes from another country. You learn something about the culture. And it's a bonding effect that mm-hmm. you're out there and you're competing together. And then you celebrate together. You enjoy their food and
mm-hmm.
Their country. You travel around a little bit. And often there are charities that go along with the racing if you,
mm-hmm.
Want to contribute to that. So it's broadened us in a lot of ways to be able to travel and do an activity that we like.
Mm-hmm.
So we're lucky in that way.
Mm-hmm. You have children?
We do. We're grown and married now, and
uh-huh.
we're starting in on the grandchild venue already. But one of the interesting things is that our older son, we have two sons,
uh-huh.
and our older son lives, and his wife and their new baby live and work in Paris,
mm-hmm.
France. And have for a good 8 years now?
He's been over 10.
10 years. And, of course, for some people, after your children leave home and everything and get them through college, et cetera, you think, well, there's nothing more I can do, right?
Right, right.
But it was surprising. They came down to see us when we raced in Austria and Switzerland at those Ironmans and volunteered at the event.
Really?
And they also came to Hawaii once when Karen was doing it and got the bug a little bit. So suddenly they have started doing, on a relay basis, some triathlons.
Good.
And just more recently, our son has done some full Olympic distance triathlons. And the real kick is going to be this summer when we're over in Europe. He and I and a friend will be doing the Paris Triathlon as a relay together. So
that's
for the
fun.
First time ever, kind of the son, father, whatever
cool.
Connection. So that'll be a lot of fun.
You know, triathlon's had a big resurgence the last few years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got some friends in California that do that. Do you see a lot of people 40 plus doing triathlons?
Or is more and more, actually.
More and more, yeah.
I mean, the bulk of people are, well, the 40 is a pretty big age group now. The 30-year-olds are
mm-hmm.
probably the largest, but the 40-year-olds, mm-hmm. there are a lot of them. There are more in my age group now
mm-hmm.
than there used to be, and there's Sister Madonna, who is now 80 and still racing.
And she's in Tucson this weekend?
And she's in Tucson this weekend.
Right. She doesn't live here, though. She's here for an event.
She lives in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
Yeah. But,
I think they did mention at Kona last year. They have a dinner each year in
mm-hmm.
Kona at the championships for what do they call it? The gents? And
they call them Iron Gents and Iron Ladies.
It's
for
dinner.
Athletes
it's
60
for
and
60
older. It's
for 60 and over, a dinner, and then the race director and so forth is there, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think they mentioned last year over 60 competitors, there were like 170. So it's getting bigger and bigger
wow.
in terms of that older age group.
Yeah, so if you're going to win in Kona in your age group, I think you're going to have to be 100 years old to outlast them. It's getting tougher and tougher.
You see the best of the best there.
But
yeah.
it's kind of fun, too, because I've been lucky, like I say, to have been there four times, and I see some of the same people. And
mm-hmm.
It's it's fun to see them and that they're still out there. And it's a really fine looking group of people. And I mean, I'm one of them. How lucky is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I just think I'm so lucky to be out there and doing this. And
well, and the neat thing, too, about competing as you're older and get up, you look forward to the next age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because you want to, you get in that next age group, you're golden. So
right.
So none of this. Oh no, I'm a year older.
Roger's golden this year. He's going to be
new age group. Yay!
And so Karen, tell us a little bit about what it takes to actually qualify for the Ironman in Hawaii, because that's a process in itself, isn't it?
To qualify for Hawaii, they have about 20-some races that are qualifiers. And basically, in the older age groups, there's one slot in that age group. So you basically have to win your age group at a qualifying event.
Really?
And the majority of those qualifying events are other Ironman races. There are a handful, I mean, like on one hand, of half Ironman qualifiers and less of those. Because they now have a half Ironman, which they call a 70.3, half the distance world competition. So it's mostly Ironman events, and they have to be on that list of qualifying Ironman. So there's competition to get into these events. You sign up like a year ahead of time.
Wow.
Just to get
have a chance,
and then hope you're healthy and it all goes well and you get there, and then...
And
you have to win your age group to get that slot. Some of the bigger age groups, like the 30-year-olds, they have more slots.
Right. When you go to Kona, you're full distance, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And what are those distances for people that don't know?
2.4-mile swim.
Ocean.
In the ocean. Yeah. No wetsuit. 112-mile bike ride. And 26.2-mile marathon run. And same distances, and you have cutoff times for each segment.
Which are for you guys, what are they?
They're the same for everybody.
Really?
It doesn't matter about your age, gender, abilities, one leg, two legs, no legs. Doesn't matter if you have some disease and you're out there, same cutoff time. And it's 2 hours and 20 minutes for the swim. 10.5 hours total, you have to be off the bike. And then you have 17 hours at Kona to finish the race. Some of the international events only have a little faster times. And like when we did Switzerland, that had 16-hour cutoff time. And this bike cutoff was a little shorter, and the swim cutoff was a little shorter. So,
what's your best time in Kona?
My best time in Kona is 14:56.
Yeah. And how old were you?
I was 60. I was in my 60s.
Yeah.
I don't remember which 60 what, but...
Better than sitting on the couch.
In my 60s. So, and...
14 hours straight of racing? Yeah, that's a little calorie burn.
We're starting in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a long day.
It's a long day. But, you know, I mean, the goal is sub-17 at Kona. I mean, you just...
Yeah.
You never know. I mean, you never know what conditions are going to be. You might... have a slower day that day, but if you finish, it's a real victory. If you get to the starting line in Kona, it's a victory.
So you're 67. So
yes.
How are you holding up? How do you feel when you're training and racing?
I feel great.
Good.
I really do. I find it's energizing for me. I mean, granted, there are some days, like I said, I really like to swim and bike and run, but... It's Tucson. It's hot in the summer.
I noticed that today. It's only March.
and today is, you know, mild.
Right.
But in the summer, you're looking at 100-degree days pretty much most of the summer. And often training for Kona, you'll have a 100-plus-mile bike ride.
Is that bike ride as hot as it looks?
It's hotter here, actually, but you don't have the humidity. So it's a dry heat, but believe me, 100 is hot. And I like to bike. But it's a real push out the door to get yourself out there on 100-degree days, biking 100 miles. You start out really early, and I do bike with some other people on occasion, but on those 100-day, 100-degree heat days, I don't get a lot of takers people.
Yeah, I bet.
Want to ride 100 miles today? No, I don't think so.
100 miles and 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you, well, if you start early enough, you might make it before it's 105 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, try to beat the heat.
One thing I might mention is that you mentioned how's the body holding up. And, and of course, as you age, things are going to happen,
sure.
Right? So.
Yeah.
And but the point is, don't stop, you know, because,
right.
For example, over the last year, little year plus, I had to have my knee, arthroscopy on my knee and so forth. And so on one side, I don't have any cartilage left and some stuff like that. And then I had some other surgery, too, that took me a while, whatever. But still, you can just keep a positive frame of mind and get through that. And we were able to do a couple of half Ironman races this last year, including the World Championships out in Florida. And coming back with some ambitious plans this year for racing. So you can get through the age kind of things that happen in terms of osteoporosis and cartilage damage and what have you, and still come back and do what you like to do physically.
I think orthopedically, the most damaging thing to joints is inactivity.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
your joints dry up, and what a lot of people don't understand is that the synovial fluid carries nutrition and it bathes the surfaces of the joint with nutrients. And so a lot of people are having joint replacements, not just because of the friction, but because the joints are starving to death. And then you factor on the weight on top of that.
The weight factor is a killer.
The weight, the lack of muscle tone, the bone issues that come from not doing enough weight bearing. In all honesty, I did actually have a stress fracture last year in my foot.
You're a petite type woman, your build, so it's...
Oh, she's going to thank you for that.
Yeah, I like that. But
the running is
The running and the impact.
It gives the impact to the bones, which is good for the
bone
density.
Which is good, but you can overdo it.
Sure.
And I think that was the case in training for Kona and the hard pavement. It was a little bit of overuse there, so there's a balance. Luckily, in the triathlon, you can swim and you can bike, so I did that. I'm back running now. So you just, the things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Part of it is aging, part of it is overuse, part of it is setting up that kind of intense training. So you just have to address those things and try to balance it out, and that's where taking time to build on these things and not quite overdoing it. It's all a balance, and you learn, and then you have to back off and allow a certain amount of healing time and do things that aren't going to aggravate it.
But you don't quit.
Of course not.
Yeah, I've noticed.
I looked at it as an opportunity to swim better and bike better.
That's a good outlook,
So I'm not going to run right now, except in the water.
Yeah.
Water running is great.
Sure.
So you find ways to work around it.
I've noticed since, you know, I got to about 45, and then it's like there's always some little something, but you just learn to work through it, and that's just the way that it is.
Right.
Yeah, you can't let it stop you, otherwise you'd never do anything.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and Chuck mentioned that too.
Mm-hmm.
He
yeah.
was really big on the, well, you never really stop. I mean, he was scoped, and he was out riding, you know, a few days later.
Yeah, we had signed up, this was again a year ago or so, and to do Ironman Coeur d'Alene up in Idaho. And you have to sign up again almost a year ahead of time. Well, lo and behold, then I went in and had to have the knee scope and everything. But within a month and a half after that was the race, and of course you've paid your money, whatever. So still able to, with the doctor's blessing, go up and do the swim bike, not the run. It was a little early, but get in and get a little competition, at least in part of it. So
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I have gotten that out of the shows today. It's just, I asked Chuck about that quite a bit, the discipline to keep in the game, because a lot of people, they're in, they're out. And that's one of the things I wanted to get out of the interviews today is, you know, what are the tricks to stay active?
Plus, and I like playing the game.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I get a joy out of being in the game.
Right.
And
not an observer, but a participant.
Exactly. So I'm going to try to keep in there. One of my biking friends even asked me this week, aren't you afraid of getting hurt out there doing what you do? I mean, there's going to be a time when you're not going to be able to do that. And I'm you can't worry about that.
Right.
I mean, you do what you can. You try to train smart. If you have an injury, you take the time that you need. You address it, and you take time off from it, and you do other things. But I can't think, oh, I'm not going to do this because I might get hurt.
Right.
That's then you the end wrong up mentality.
Not doing much of anything. Yeah.
And finding what you like, you know, to do. You can't superimpose what someone else really enjoys doing. But, and if that's hiking or
sure.
kayaking or you know, whatever, then I think it helps that you keep your commitment going. You keep it as a priority and don't say, well, I'll just...
I do something every day. I've done a lot more variety as I've gotten older. I used to do a lot of bike racing, you know, so I spent a lot of time on my bike. Did biathlon a little bit too, but mainly it was biking. And I don't know, I kind of paid my dues of being single sport minded and endurance, so I do a lot of different things now. I never know what I'm going to do. I just know that when I get up that day, I'm going to do something before midnight. And I've exercised, it's over 1,500 days in a row without missing a day.
Wow.
There you go.
But, you know, there are some days like today, we just went for a very mild hike. You know, it wasn't any big deal. But I was moving because I just don't, especially at 51, I don't want to stop moving. You've got to keep in motion.
Yeah.
The body's meant to be that way. You know, it really is.
Well, and, of course, medical studies and research, i.e. Wally Bortz and whatever, have shown that it... over the years, it reduces the aging factor.
You know, the
exercise and reduces the growth of aging and so forth.
And
so,
there are a lot of psychological benefits too. I talk to people about a lot. It's not just the VO2 max or the amount of weight you can move in the gym. It's a mood enhancement. You know, if things aren't going well, you can go out and go for a walk and feel a little bit better. I mean, especially when the birds are chirping like they are today. And, you know, it just makes you feel better to get out and go for a ride or run or
swim. I tell people, I'm on drugs. Endorphins.
Yeah.
Endorphins are my drug.
Yeah.
You know what?
When they kick in.
Somebody was critical about me one time. That she said, well, you know, you're just addicted to those endorphins. I go, well, it's better than being addicted to all the prescriptions like
exactly.
you're taking, so I'll take it. I'll take the bike endorphins.
Well, then I wanted to ask you, because this is one of the questions that we asked Chuck, and I already knew the answer because I had, you know, crewed for him last summer when he did one of his rides. But if you'd be nice enough to share this with us, do you guys take any medications?
No.
We've got Sharpay action here. So.
Yeah, we've got Sharpay action.
I don't.
She made it.
We're pretty Spartan that way. We don't, I mean, we do know a lot of our comrades in the sport and so forth. Ibuprofen, you know, those kinds of things. I mean, we don't know anyone that takes the hard, real hard stuff or something. But, but are popping that stuff and so forth, and we just virtually never take it. You know, the body tells you something and go with it. So,
now this is pretty remarkable, Marley, because most of the people in America, they're taking one prescription drug per decade.
Yeah.
So if you're 70, you should be on 7 pills. Don't do it.
Yeah.
But I'm just
saying. We could do a whole show just on this particular subject.
Right. That's been fascinating to discover
today.
And, you know, I'm thinking there's got to be a correlation here.
Chuck was apologetic because he occasionally takes allergy medicine. So he didn't feel like it really
counted.
Seasonal,
you know.
That he never took anything. Yeah. But what I was basically talking about was the drugs that are really indicative of the lifestyle.
Right.
So you're taking high, you know, you have high blood pressure, you're taking blood pressure drugs.
Yeah.
Or you're taking drugs for high cholesterol.
Right.
Or you're taking drugs for type 2 diabetes because that's what you've been diagnosed with a sedentary lifestyle and you're overweight and some of the other issues.
Yeah.
And these people that are in their 70s are not taking anything.
In all fairness, actually, I do take one medication, and that is for my bones. There's a history of osteoporosis in my family, and my bones, even with all the activity that I do, my bones are small. So that's even with the weight bearing, that's
a number
an
of people
in
get
there.
Into these dietary supplement stuff too, which is highly unregulated.
Right.
And so you can get some real bad stuff over the market that claims. Mm-hmm. To do a lot, and so, but it's better not to touch all that.
You know what Jacqueline said If man makes it, don't eat it.
Exactly. And there's a book that I, well, two books actually that I kind of follow. One is Michael Pollan's book, Food Rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, eat real food, not too much.
Real food.
Mostly
yeah.
plants.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the processed food. It's simple enough.
Right.
It's like fruits, vegetables, quite easy.
Your body is a machine if you put the right fuel in
and
it.
And then there's Bob Sibohar, who has his book out, Metabolic Efficiency Training.
Mm-hmm.
I heard him speak last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically using a lot of real food. And he said,
real food.
Real food.
Yeah.
You don't need to be putting even all these extra sugars into yourself, even doing an Ironman, if you train your body to use its stored fat, you can, you know, you have little periods like a pie. So when you're racing, you can add more sugar, but when you're just base building, let your body utilize the stored fat and the things that are out there rather than just popping sugar, gels, bars and everything. Get your body to be a little more efficient. And use regular food. Gee, how simple is
that? Put real food in.
And to get real performance out.
That's right.
Did you know I almost got killed in the head-on last year?
No.
Well, there's a story related to this to what we're talking about, but I was driving over to Paso Robles, and a guy came over a hill. And
I do remember
he
that.
He crossed into my lane, and I just, you know, I have a 350Z, so it sticks pretty well. And had I not had a car like that, I think I would have rolled it and spun out. But anyway, in my rearview mirror, when I got past him, I saw him flying off a cliff. So, you know, to make a long story short, we ran back, and he died there at the scene.
Wow.
And there was a fireman, paramedic there on the scene first. And he got the truck rolled over on top of him, and the couple guys pushed it off, and they tried to do CPR, but he was gone. And he got in the truck, and the guy had a whole, like, shopping bag full of medications.
Wow.
And the paramedic knew what they were all for. And he was just taking one out. And he must have had a dozen of them in there. And it's like, high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, this and that and this and that. And he goes, you know, the guy probably just coded out.
Yeah, probably had a heart attack or something.
But he wasn't that much older than me. And he just was a traveling pharmaceutical experiment, you know. So I think it's amazing today that we talk to these people their age that pretty much aren't taking anything.
So you were
except the workout.
Yeah.
You were talking about doing things and being active, and I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Walter Bortz or not.
I've heard him speak before.
Okay, well, he's a really personal friend of ours.
Oh, he's an amazing person.
And he has a brand new book out now called Next Medicine, but basically
he's a Stanford guy, right?
Yeah. And he's retired now. He walks the talk. He runs a marathon a year. But basically, he says we really need to spend more time on prevention.
Yes.
And not just handing out these pills that ties into all that medication. And
he was a keynote speaker. I'm in the certified the American College of Sports Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a keynote speaker a couple of years ago when I saw him. Mm-hmm. And I really liked him over a lot of the other speakers because he really cut to the chase. He had that kind of Jack Elaine edge, no BS, straight up, this is what needs to happen, and I'm proving it. And, you know, we, like you said, he's leading by example. He's walking
the
walk, yeah. I really liked his style. And, of course, he's a doctor, so he can speak with authority on the clinical side of it, too. But, yeah, he was, I think I got his book, too.
He's not afraid to take on his own profession as well, which he does in this new book quite handily.
Really? So, I'll have to get it,
then. Yeah. It's called Next Medicine, but I remember hearing him talk, and he said, if you are what you do, when you don't, you ain't. So I thought, well, that
I love that.
Kind of interesting. And his wife, Ruth Ann, was my role model
really?
I started
cool.
into running, and she's the one who encouraged me to train for Boston and
really?
Trained with me. And in 1994, 1995, all of us did the Boston Marathon. Was it 95 or 96? The 100th.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the year was. Maybe it was 96. All of us did the Boston Marathon.
Wow.
Wally and Ruth Ann and a whole group of us from the Bay Area ran the 100th. Anniversary, and Ruth Ann, his wife, is now 80.
He's in his upper 70s, right?
He'll be 81 this month.
Okay, wow.
It's his birthday.
She's going to run Boston.
She's going to run Boston this year.
And next month. So
no excuses. Yeah. I love it.
He ran it last year.
Really?
Was the oldest finisher. I mean, he's slow. He will tell you he's slow.
Well, he's 80.
So what?
Yeah, he's 80. He's still running.
He can do it.
Yeah,
he's
great.
Still doing a marathon a year. So, you know, I was very lucky to be in an area to have such great role models and...
passing it on now.
That's right.
Maybe someone will hear this and...
I hope so.
They'll get recalibrated.
I hope so.
Well, this is great. I really appreciate you guys coming in. I've learned a lot, and gosh, we have 3 more days in Tucson, so it's been a great experience. And you've been listening to the Lean Braze Radio Show at theleanbraze.com, and we've had Karen and Roger Bivens, triathletes here in Tucson, leading by example. Supercharged rockabilly today, provided by Hot Rod Walt and the Psycho DeVilles from Atlanta. Until next time, keep your foot in the accelerator for health and rock on. Ready on the roof, rock, ready to rock you tonight.